You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Welcome to Justin Hawkins Rides Again, the podcast where I discuss the pitfalls of the music trade and what it's like working in this fickle industry. This week, it's all about publishing, also known as how songwriters make money. I'm joined by my producer, Jenny Mae Finn, who grills me on how I earn a living through songwriting. How does it work? And what do you do if you want to become a professional songwriter? And what are the rules? I try to explain all of this from my experience in the industry, writing for The Darkness and for other artists as well. I think this is a pretty focused chat, actually. I don't know if there are too many tangential meanderings, but one of the remarkable things is that with no consultation whatsoever, Jenny Mae Finn and I wore almost exactly the same outfit, right down to the spectacles, because it's, you know, this is more about the sort of business side of stuff, so it was important for us both to look businessy, I think. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed the episode, and you can also watch it over on my YouTube channel. Nice one, guys. Enjoy. Good day to you one and all. It is I, Justin Hawkins, and this is Justin Hawkins Rides Again, The Jaws of Victory, Pitfalls of the Music Trade. How do songwriters make money? Get paid. How is it?
Publishing.
Publishing. Basically publishing. I'll do the theme tune and then we'll crack on. Jenny Mae Finn joins me today for an in-depth chat about the business, but on the publishing side, which is a very specific area, isn't it? Right? We're not gonna dance into master recordings or anything like that. Justin Hawkins rides again. Smouldering. Did you see the smoulder?
I saw the smoulder. Yeah. Thank you.
Are you wearing those glasses because your eyesight is poor, or because you wanted to look exactly like me?
You put yours on after you saw mine. It's because I've been sat editing for about 10 hours today.
Does it make your eyes ache?
Yeah. I was in the coffee shop for 5 hours.
Yeah.
I didn't even realise I was there. I was there from 8 a.m.
Wow.
Yeah.
Which one did you go to?
The Old Dairy.
Oh, I love that place.
Okay, well, I'll ask you the first question.
Go on then, let's get into the questions.
What does publishing mean?
Oh, that is the most difficult one. Oh, okay. So when you listen to a song, any song or any piece of music, you're listening to the recorded product, right? That's the, so somebody's license, or somebody owns the license to be able to exploit a recording. And that's a whole area of business to do with record companies. But the songs themselves, the people that write those, they're concerned with the publishing side. A quick example of this, I think we talked about this with adverts and synchronizations on one of our episodes, didn't we? So what I was saying was, like, when you hear a song recorded by the original artist in an advert, there will have been two bits of money paid, and it's usually the same amount of money. So, say for example, Richie Clifton's Christmas Hat on My Head is being used for the John Lewis advert, right? So they pay an amount of money to whoever it is that owns the license for the master recording. That might be Big Hat Records.
Who decides who owns the license?
Pardon?
Who decides who owns the license?
Well, if you're in a record contract, then your record company owns it.
So they always own it?
Pardon?
Do they always own it?
That depends on the nature of your deal.
Can you own it?
Pardon?
Can you own it?
You can own it, yeah. You can just license it for a period of time. But, you know...
So do they pay you if you license it to them?
Yeah, that's how record deals work, I think. They basically give you an advance for the rights to exploit your recorded materials.
And they get a percentage.
Yeah, you're lucky if you get one, but yeah.
So why would you give it to them if they're not going to give you any money?
No, they don't give you much money, but what they give you is the guidance and the clout and the A&R department and the publicity lot. You know, they
does
have,
anyone own your songs? Who owns your songs?
Who owns my songs?
Yeah.
Well, I think the first two records are owned by Atlantic.
Do they still own it?
I think they do, yeah, because they still pay me royalties on it.
So you don't own it?
I don't think so. I don't actually remember. I think we recorded it and then we sold them the license. But I'm not sure if it was for perpetuity. But when we do the reissue of the first record, which comes out, when does that come out again? October?
7th of October, I think. Or 6th. 7th, I think.
All right. Well, when that comes out, it's still an Atlantic product. So
they get money.
Yeah, so they'll be collecting the money and paying us whatever our percentage is. I can't remember what it is now. But your royalty rate depends on what you've managed to negotiate with them. So that's records, right? If Permission to Land was full of cover versions, the people that wrote those songs would also be rewarded. There's mechanical royalties every time somebody buys a record. When it plays on the radio, the whoever it is that composed the song gets money. The simplest way to say it is that publishing is concerned with songwriters, and the recording side of it is to do with who played on the record or who the band is that's playing it. I don't know how to clarify that any further, really.
So they just represent the songwriters, not the band.
Publishing is about the songwriters. There's nothing to do with the artist that sings it. Like, for example, if Dua Lipa does an Elton John song. The Elton John song is written
and
by
she records it and then releases it.
She records it and releases it.
She gets any money from it?
Pardon?
Does she get any money from it?
Does she get any money from it?
Yeah.
Yeah, she'll get money from the record company. But Elton John and Bernie Taupin, who probably wrote the songs in the first place, will get the publishing money. See what I mean?
Hmm. Okay, what happens when you make a song? What's the first thing you have to do?
Let's say
you never made a song before, and then you make a song.
That's such a weird question. What do you do? People used to record a little demo and then they used to send it to themselves to protect themselves copyright. Do you remember?
No, but like, how does it work from there? Something PRSA, isn't it?
PRS.
What's that? PRS.
What's the
I don't
A
know.
Bit?
I but don't know. Everything has an A.
It's
at the
Performing
end.
Rights
Association.
Prevent Royal Society, Prevention of Cruelty to Songwriters. Essentially.
What does it say? What does it mean?
I can't remember now.
This is where you need to do research before an episode too.
Performing Rights Society, I think, something like that.
But when you make a song, you can't don't just start making money from it.
No,
you can't just make money from it. Something has to happen between that you're writing it and then that happening.
Well, okay, I can tell you from my experience. I'm published by a company called Cobalt, and they signed me to be a songwriter. But as an added sort of, I've been with them for 10 years now. So as an added bonus, when I got all the sort of the rights to my earlier works, which was the first couple of Darkness records and so on, when that reverted to me from Universal, who we initially signed to, Cobalt also administer that now. So my publishing company handles my entire catalogue, and it's all the songs I've written for Darkness, myself, other artists and everything. And they're responsible for all that, you know. And it's nothing to do with the recordings. It's actually like if somebody covers one of my songs, then they have to go and collect the money for it and pay it over to me. And that's kind of how publishing companies work. It's a bit like a bank. That's actually one of the things my brother observed very early on. It's kind of like when you take an advance, you're borrowing money, and then every time someone listens to one of your songs, or it gets played on the radio, or somebody does a gig and sings one of your songs, there are societies around that will collect money. Like, you know, when you go to a pub and you see a sticker that says PRS in the window, you know what I mean? Like, you've seen that before, or any sort of public space. If there's a jukebox in there or they're playing the radio, every sort of venue where you can hear music is obliged to pay some sort of subscription, which will be, you know, the level that they have, that they pay, is going to be determined by the sort of numbers of people that they expect to have in those premises. And then from those contributions that every sort of broadcasting company or pub or venue or anywhere that where there's music, all those subscriptions that they've had to pay gets divvied up and paid out to all the songwriters, and they try and keep track of who's played what, so the right people are rewarded from this huge pot of money. That's actually, most of publishing is like that. So that society, I think they, and this is going to be me making up some bullshit, okay, but I think it was designed to protect songwriters from, you know, irate spouses and people that kidnapped them and stuff like that. They would always have an income. When you have those societies collect that money, and they usually pay half of it to your publisher and the other half goes direct to you. So even in a situation when you've taken a huge advance for publishing and you're nowhere near recouping, you've spent it all on a stupid car, you've had a huge tax bill and you're fucked, the PRS society will actually come and give you some sort of earnings, so you can actually.
So do you get half from Cobalt and half from PRS?
No, PRS pay half to you and half to Cobalt. That's how it works.
But how? You didn't set up your PRS, because I have 4% of a Darkness song, and you said set up PRS.
How was that? How much has that yielded so far?
I don't know. What am I supposed to do?
You're supposed to register with PRS, but I think you need a certain number of broadcasted works. There's some criteria that you need to meet.
Then I'm not getting anything. Also, it's the bonus track in the Japanese edition.
It's a great line, though, the Hunchback line.
I had multiple lines, by the way. You always think it's one line. I had multiple lines. I had at least three.
You said them
four.
Just after I said them.
No, I said it and you went, yeah, that's good. That's my line. I was feeding you lines the whole time in the studio on the way to Pizza Express. At Pizza Express.
I don't know what you're talking about.
After Pizza Express.
Are you coming after a bigger share of Age of Darkness? Doing it on a podcast.
You keep telling me I have one line. It's only worth 4% anyway.
No, I'm only saying...
There's 12 verses, so...
I'm only saying... Yeah, exactly. I'm only saying that one particular line was good.
It's probably the song with the most lines in it, so you really whittled down my percentage.
No, it's not about that anyway. I think Dan's melody also is a huge part of that song.
Yeah, it's a good melody. It's really varied.
It's just great that to have a song that Dan sings on.
I was there and I was trying to record him singing it, and he blew his voice up in the second line. And the second line...
That was your one as well. It's the Hunchback line.
You know, I can't sing anymore. Your
you should be giving us that 4% back, because your line was the one that killed his voice.
I told him I had 4.3. He was like, who gave you the 0.3%? I want that back.
What you're talking about there is a sort of Nashvillean style, where anybody who's in the room and says the word Hunchback.
Hey.
Because groans was actually mine. No. It wasn't even the whole line. I had to make it rhyme.
It was the whole line. No. I had multiple lines. I'm good at it. I'm good at rhyming and making up lines.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Well, anyway, it's always worth being in the room when artists are...
And make sure to have a tape recorder so you know that you had certain lines and they're just claiming others.
Yes. Anyway, so you have one. Well, I suppose it's exploited works. So you have one recording that's on that Japanese edition. Yeah. But I feel like if Dan hadn't blown his voice out, that probably would have been a single, like a worldwide hit.
Are you sure?
And you could be making serious money with that, you know.
Yeah.
I just think he was so excited.
I have it on camera.
He was showing off because there was a girl in the studio.
I know, I'm really intimidating. I make men weep because they're so...
All they want to do is sing as loudly as possible when you're in the room.
Yeah, and as manly as possible.
Just like really trying to impress you with how beefy
his
and
epiglottis
powerful.
Came out.
Flying into the microphone. It's good. That's what that pop shield's there for when singers.
He does have a lot of residue in his throat, generally, doesn't he? He does a lot of before he sings.
No, that's his warm up.
Yeah, that's what I mean. What's coming out?
That's actually that was a bit of production that I did actually because when he was I recorded that bit of him going and just stuck it at the beginning of the track. Oh dear, that's a great song. More people should be aware of that. Can you put it on in this?
Yeah.
Just to show.
I'll put just one specific part of the song in this.
But and then the hunchback line.
And then I'll just repeat it over and over.
And then watch the PRS come flooding in, or a copyright strike. One of the two.
Probably both.
I'd be surprised if you get copyright strikes on.
It's on
Japanese
the Darkness
bonus.
Channel. It's on the Darkness YouTube.
Oh, okay.
Channel.
Yeah, you might do then. Shit.
It's okay. Peasants armed with sticks and stones. A dying
hunchback roams like in that program Game of Thrones. Anyway, what were you asking me about?
PRS, before you got angry at me.
I'm still angry.
I was just trying to show an example angry. Of, let's say I had a song, how do I get my PRS? It wasn't like...
Yeah.
That's the
okay,
example.
Well, I think it might be two. You might need to have two.
What if you only have literally a one-hit wonder where you only have one hit? What happens then?
If it was an actual hit, I mean, if you're talking about something that was in the top 10, they'd definitely make an exception and sign you up.
Like a real one-hit wonder.
Like you're talking about an actual hit and then no other songs at all.
No other songs at all. I think that would be great if you were a true one.
Yeah, it would be really cool, wouldn't it? Like you just write one song and it's a hit and then it's like, where's the follow-up? Nah, no need.
And nothing before.
Yeah, just like no build-up. I just decided to write this song. You're welcome. That's really cool, actually.
That's better because you can't even perform live. You could perform the 3.5 minutes.
Well, that's the good thing about publishing. It's not about live performance. So, like the songs live on. You know, like when you're
dead.
Let's euphemistically refer to a singer like Juan.
You always say Juan, or you say Richard when you're coming up with
why do I say
names. Always Richard?
Really? Okay, so yeah, Richard.
Tomlinson.
Richard Bon...
Tombolo.
Richard Tombolo. Okay, so Richard Tombolo.
He was in a previous episode, I think.
Was he?
Yeah.
Okay, Richie Bontempi, right? Say he's had a great big hit in the mid-80s. Huge song. And loads of other songs as well, but he's losing his voice a bit. He doesn't want to sing that earlier one. Lizard with the mayor.
Like a horse or like a mayor of a town?
I was thinking the mayor of a town because it'd be like you'd have all the sort of pageantry and all the bits hanging off
the
jacket.
Oh, because they're lizards, because they're lizard people ruling the world. The conspiracy.
This is brilliant. Now, this is your second hit. Here we go. This is going to be on the Japanese edition of the next Darkness album. So what we're talking about here then is a lizard man.
Lizard and the mayor.
The mayor of a town is actually a lizard man. So we're being... It's
but
like
his best
David
friend
Icke.
Is a lizard. So maybe he's... but he's actually...
Like
him.
In that TV series V, and he takes his face off and then there's a lizard underneath it. So.
Yeah.
Lizard for the mayor. Lizard is the mayor?
You said and the mayor.
Well, I said on the mayor because I was trying to do living on a prayer, but I think...
Oh. It took a bit too long.
That's why he's Richie Bontempi. But lizard, lizard for the... Lizard is the mayor.
Lizard...
is the mayor. Yeah, I like that. That's good. Lizard is the mayor. So what's the question now? Lizard... is
you
the
don't
mayor.
Know why you started this.
No, because I started because I was just making the point that even when you can't sing anymore, your song can still deliver. And I think the copyrights of songs, like, so your contribution to The Age of Darkness will remain yours until 70 years after you've died, I think.
So you can't even take that away from me.
No, I wouldn't want to either. But I think at that point it becomes public domain. And now in my luck, that's when it'll be a hit.
When it becomes you'll be dead.
Like, no, I'm going to be cryogenically frozen so that I can keep all of my songs. Actually, I'm not sure how that works.
I'm going to set up something where someone comes and...
defrosts me. Have I still got my songs? I'm dead!
It'll be 1 year before that. It'll be in the 69th year. And I'll get someone to defrost you. And you'll have
no,
to
but that's good because then it'll reset. It's like, I'm still alive. And then get another 70 years of songs.
Does it reset? Do they have that clause? That
well,
you
I'm
die,
not dead if I'm cryogenically frozen. I'm technically still alive, aren't I?
No, you're in paused.
Well,
you're not alive. You're hardly alive.
Well, the thing is, like, no, but I mean... Oh, that's a good point, actually. What is the definition of dead? If you're cryogenically frozen, are you dead?
I think your heartbeat's dead, isn't it? I don't know. The whole when you're dead, when you're not dead's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Like, if you defrosted
where
me
does your consciousness
70
go
years after I went into a cryogenic deep freeze, and then I'm like... it's not quite the same as it was, but I'm definitely alive, you know, and then it'll be like, oh, here's your royalties, sir. And I'll be like, brilliant, give it to the scientists. I'm going back under. And then that could just top up my cryogenic subscriptions because it costs money to keep those things that cold, I think.
Yeah, especially with global warming.
Yeah, it's going to be more expensive. But then with inflation, it'd probably work out about right. So I believe in a thing called love will keep me cryogenically frozen in perpetuity until there's no more life on Earth. And at that point, you're not really...
Unless I get near it with a hairdryer.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers, all so that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Attention all small biz owners. At the UPS store, you can count on us to handle your packages with care. With our certified packing experts, your packages are properly packed and protected. And with our pack and ship guarantee, when we pack it and ship it, we guarantee it. Because your items arrive safe or you'll be reimbursed. Visit the upsstore.com/guarantee for full details. Most locations are independently owned. Product services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Come into your local store today.
Yeah, but I suppose I'm going to use the Christmas song money to hire some security to keep you away.
Just always dipping in my hairdryers and little Dyson things. But I'll dress up like this and they'll be like, oh, he's back to life. He looks even younger.
This and you look
more
like
feminine.
You look like what I would look like after being cryogenically frozen for 70 years.
Hey!
You said that.
I said younger and more feminine looking, not older and more
frozen.
You mean
frozen. Even younger and even more feminine looking than what I look?
Yeah, I mean, my face is definitely wrinklier than yours, obviously. Did you just see that me?
I'm seeing at you. Okay, so to answer your question, it's unclear as to whether the songs written by people who are cryogenically frozen...
There's no pause clause.
I'm going to put a pause clause into my next publishing deal.
Why 7 years?
I'm not really sure, actually.
Three score years
and 10 is what we're expected to live for. Maybe it's just like another life expectancy. So you get.
Well, they think that people are going to live to 140 now.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think I smoked too many cigarettes for that sort of thing.
You definitely smoked too many cigarettes for that. You need to get some new lungs.
Which they can do, I think, can't they?
Yeah, stem cells and stuff, but it might be difficult. I was, yeah.
I'd have to, I mean, they should do a thing where, like, if you, like, if somebody needs a new liver, my liver's in great condition because I haven't had anything alcoholic for, what, 17 years now. So if somebody needs a liver transplant, mm-hmm. and I need a lung transplant, and they've got really good lungs because they never smoked, but they drank a lot, and I smoke a lot but don't drink. So we should have a fight to the death, and then I get to keep their lungs.
Well, the thing with liver is that you can give half a liver to someone and keep your liver because they kind of regenerate.
Well, you can probably do that with lungs as well, can't you?
I don't think they can. No, lungs, you can't cut off half a lung and be okay. Okay.
Well, anyway.
You can stem, they might be able to stem cell it though.
Yeah. What do you mean by that?
So they would inject you, they would grow part of a lung using stem cells and then like try and put it in.
Stick it in there.
So it grows in you.
Right, what's the next question?
Do managers get any of that money?
Yeah, usually the manager's going to take a percentage in commission on.
Do they get some of your publishing money?
Pardon?
Do they get some of your publishing money?
Yeah, whatever you earn, your manager takes a percentage of. Because if your music is effectively exploited, your management is probably partly responsible for that, you know, because it's going to be about the band's profile or, people are going to hear the song in some other capacity and they represent you, they deserve to earn off it. So
has the YouTube channel helped with publishing?
Pardon?
Has the YouTube channel helped with it?
I don't know.
You don't really track it.
It's hard to say. What do you think?
I don't know. I haven't seen any numbers, so I can't tell.
I think...
I'd just have been guessing.
There's definitely... I'm definitely seem to be making more on streaming than I used to.
Is it worth any of the streaming?
It never used to be, but suddenly it is.
Oh.
Which I think is... Because did they change the way they pay... this is another episode. You need to educate me on how streaming works.
Yeah. We could get a streaming person on.
Yeah, that'd be cool. And then we could ask them... Because there's been so many outcries about the way artists are rewarded by streaming.
Well, people are using Tidal. People stream on YouTube, so you're going to be making money on YouTube. So maybe every time someone watches one of these, then on the up next thing...
But I don't know... When one question I would like to ask is like, so when a Spotify, like when so if somebody plays the song a million times on Spotify, does Spotify pay both the licensed? They must do, mustn't they? Must pay the person who wrote the song and the person who recorded the song.
Yeah.
So it's the same as being on the radio, right?
Yeah, but less, because radio is worth quite a lot per play, isn't it?
Used to be, but you know what? I'm going to look at my portal. I've got such a...
I know, I liked always looking at your portal. Sorry, this is weird. But it was fascinating. Because it's cool that it's an app. You never think of it. You're like, oh, royalties. Oh, they've got actually a really functioning, well-run app.
Yeah, and it will tell you... I mean, it tells me what kind of percentages... What type of income it is, you know, like, so like, for example, if I look at, let's say the Christmas song, okay, I'm going to look at the Christmas song. How do I do that? Christmas song, here we go. Type in song.
Can I get that app from my Age of Darkness?
Only if you sign to Kobol. This is the Kobol app.
Yeah, I'll sign to them.
Okay, that's fine then.
They'll be really happy.
Yeah, they'll be really chuffed. Because, you know, Japanese bonus track. Okay. So as an example, the Christmas song. Mm-hmm. 44% of the money that it made in the last quarter came from broadcast. So, that's
weird.
TV or when it's on radio.
That's still a bit weird because the last quarter wouldn't have been Christmas.
Yeah, but stuff comes in, you know what I mean? Like it trickles in late. It takes sometimes a quarter or two or sometimes even a year, depending on which country it's in, for the publishers to see that. 41% of that song's earnings came from public performance, which can be like, I guess that's
who
gigs.
Pays that?
That's gigs, right?
Well, but who pays that?
The people who own the venues and the promoters.
So they have to pay. Do they not lose a lot of money from having bands in then, if they're always having to pay money to PRS?
They don't directly pay the bands the PRS money. They pay PRS.
Yeah.
And then they'll distribute it.
Do they pay like a set fee every year?
Now, when you play a festival, you have to submit the set list to the performing.
So at Glastonbury, you have to pay a lot of PRS?
Yeah, I would say so.
Well,
that's a lot of. Some of your ticket money when you buy a festival ticket is probably going to go to that, I reckon.
Makes sense.
Some of this is guesswork. I mean, please, viewers and listeners.
No, but it's interesting. I remember when you said PRS from live stuff, that blew my mind.
Yeah. But you have to you have to sort of carefully fill in a document every time you play, really. So 9% of the Christmas song is from streaming. And then there's 6% that's just labelled other. I don't know what that means.
Maybe that's like pubs. Oh, no.
No, that won't be there.
Like as in like jukeboxes.
Let me have a look here a second. I'm going to look at I Believe in a Thing Called Love now. So broadcast, 22%. Public performance, 9%. Streaming, 62%. What does that tell you?
That you're getting paid a lot more than you thought by streaming?
On that particular song. Yeah.
That is a lot.
Let me look up Age of Darkness and see what I'm making on that.
And then what's your percentage on it? I hope it's 4.
I can't remember. It's four, less than 4, I think.
Yeah.
Wow, it's doing really well, actually.
Can you give me some of 4% of yours?
How does that work?
Oh, I'll get 1% from each member.
Look at this. This is brilliant. Okay, so I just looked up The Age of Darkness, which is written by Hawkins, Patterson, Taylor, and May.
It's Finn!
I don't know why it's... That's why you're not getting any money. But there's another reason why you're not getting
any
money.
May? I can't see it. You need to show me. Is it... Oh! Not even anything.
So, and this is the funny thing. This quarter, it made no money. But don't worry, because throughout all time, it's made no money. It's made zero.
Oh,
all
it's
time.
It's on the album.
It's on the
it made no money. It's on the album.
I'm just looking at the various territories that it made no money in. France didn't make any money in there.
It's not in the France. Go to Japan.
United States didn't make any money there. Okay, the types of broadcast, 0%.
Well, it's made none, so it's obviously made none everywhere. It's hardly going to make some somewhere and then we'll get none. Oh, at least it's an upward graph.
Yeah, it's good. An upward graph because prior to this collection period, it didn't exist. And now it does. So you've created something. I think after this, though, a lot of people are going to listen to it and check it out.
Stream Age of Darkness.
The Age of Darkness or the Age of the Dark? What is it called again?
I don't know. I didn't even know the name of it when you wrote it. Yeah, I'll put it in Spotify. Age of
Darkness. And then put it on repeat. Just let it run.
It just, when I put Age of Darkness, Age of Man comes up by Greta Van Fleet.
They're getting all our royalties.
It's not on Spotify. No wonder it's not making any money. It's not on nothing.
But it's not about that, though, is it? It's about the creative process and how much... And being in the moment, right? We really enjoyed writing that song, didn't we?
Yeah.
So.
I like rhyming things and writing songs.
Yeah, me too. It's some of my most favourite stuff to do.
How did you find your first publisher? I remember Mike talking to you last time we were hanging out, and I don't know if we can mention this.
What did Mike talk to?
He was like, I wined and dined you so much.
Oh, yeah, but he wasn't my first publisher, though.
But, like, what was that about? Did they bid for you? Like, how do you find, do you get one automatically when you get signed by a label?
Well, I think if you're a band and you're doing stuff that is, you know, you're on people's radars, you know, publishers' radars when you start getting any sort of audience. So when we recorded our first record and we started touring and doing all that sort of stuff, we didn't have a record deal. And the thing that I think, I can't remember when we did the deal with Mike, but Mike McCormack is the boss of Universal, but for about 9 months he followed us around the world. We were doing big stuff as well because it was the album was coming out and we were doing stuff in America. He was with us for that. He came everywhere.
But he wasn't your publisher at the time.
He wasn't. No, he was just really determined to sign us, and the whining and dining that he described to you is that's what it was. You know, it was kind of. He bought us all guitars, and he wasn't. It wasn't just him. There was EMI were after us, Sony for a while, and Warner's too, and they all sort of had.
So it's like, you know, being pursued by like someone courting you.
Yeah, but it was kind of like a bidding war as well. Like it got to the point where there was quite a lot of money involved, and it was a bit of one-upmanship, and everybody was trying to sort of. Get the catalog, you know. Because
what did that feel like, though? Was that because you wouldn't have experienced that before, right?
No, I mean,
and it would have been big numbers, which you probably wouldn't have seen before.
Big numbers, like numbers that were preposterously big, you know, life changing numbers, and we were all still just living, you know, in bedsits, and we were out touring all the time, so it didn't really matter where we lived, but. The numbers that they were talking about was buying yourself a house numbers, you know. And it was just very surreal, to be honest.
Because he said that you were just like, no. That you looked like you were kind of just like, would take, you know, do the whining and dining and then walk off. Like a really rich man pursuing a beautiful woman. And then at the end she's like, goodbye. And he's like, what?
But did he say that that's what all bands are like, or did he say it was worse of us?
I think he said you were quite... Well, you were there when he was telling it. He was telling you.
I can't remember.
We were sat together. What? He wasn't talking about you behind your back.
Well, I can't remember what he said, though. Did he say...
He just said the number of how much money he spent just on the whining and dining. I think. And that wasn't the publishing deal.
No, but I'll tell you what. You know, the thing about the...
You were like, felt you were quite embarrassed. Like, I'm sorry, I was like...
Yeah, we were pretty bad.
But he thought it was funny. He thought it was fun, I think.
I mean...
Like it was part of the game.
It was... Yeah, because the whole thing about that is like you only get one moment in your life when, you know, imagine you're like a pub band and 3/4 of the band are from Lowestoft, and then the biggest music publishers in the world are sending their most powerful and influential people to come and try and impress you and get your business. That's a situation that you get once in your life, you know. And so it's really important to make the right decision as to who you think you can creatively move forward with, who's going to pay the most money, blah blah blah. There's a lot of considerations, and you can't just go, oh, thanks for the meal, where's that pen, yeah, I'll sign the contract. You can't do that. It's just, you only get one chance.
But was it that, or were you enjoying the elongation of it, if you had EMI, Warner, Universal all chasing after you?
Well, I think it's just the fact is we're on the road all the time. We didn't need houses. We were in a position where we could just keep negotiating.
What made you decide?
I think it was because Mike had come around the world with us. I mean, that was really it. And we loved him anyway. He is a great guy, you know. He's just an awesome person. He's been a brilliant friend ever since those days, you know. But we were lucky enough to really get to know the guy that we were signing to. And we knew that it was somebody that had our backs and would fight in our corner and all the other platitudes and tropes, you know, all those things. But, you know, I think we wouldn't have told him this at the time, but I think it wasn't long into that pursuit where we'd made our decision. We already knew
after the first meal, like you said, you can't just have the first meal.
Yeah, I mean, it was like that. I mean, we're like, well, this is the guy, obviously, but let's just keep it going. See what we can squeeze out of him.
You know? Well, maybe you wanted to squeeze more out of the other guys for a bit.
Well, actually, yeah, there was a bit of that going on. But, you know, there was Richard Manners from Warners is a really tempting proposition, because he was working with somebody that I knew from my first publishing deal. The only guy that would, you know, ever believe in my music before The Darkness was part of Warners. So that was really, really tempting as well, because we had proper history. But the thing about Universal was it was so impressive the way they pursued us. You know, they really showed us that they wanted it.
And it's quite nice seeing someone chase a band like that, though.
Pardon?
It's quite nice seeing a band being pursued, though, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like I can't imagine it now.
Well, I think, like, nearly everything I did in those days added to the perceived value of our stock, you know. There's no real risk involved when there's a number one album for them to collect. You know what I mean? It got to that point, and it's like we were already getting sort of fairly healthy PRS payments into our bank accounts. You know, at one point we were like, oh, okay, well, whoever it is we signed to, we'll have to knock that off because they can't collect on that. You know, do you know what I mean? Like we would have had to reduce the advance by whatever we'd already been paid by PRS, which is fair enough. Because we elongated it so much that a couple of quarters of us being successful passed.
Yeah.
So, you know, we just wanted to make sure we chose the right person, and I think we did, you know.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10/1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
You know, he's just a brilliant man, and that was obvious from early on. And we kept him close, but whenever he asked a question, I remember there was one time when he got quite emotional. It's like standing in the rain outside this club, which has been fucking spending all of his money in, and I think it was like. Why isn't it? Is it going to be me or who? And I was like. We'll be in touch. You know. But he knew I was playing the game, you know. It was a game, wasn't it? You know. I hope he knew that. He must have known that.
He seemed to remember it laughing, so that's good.
I mean, we just had the best time. It was that period of time when everything was unfolding. It was all exciting. We knew something big was coming because we hadn't done the big single. We're out all around the world.
So you got it before I Believe in Think I Love?
Pardon?
You got it before I Believe in a Thing Called Love.
What do you mean, the publishing deal?
I can't
actually remember when we signed it. But what I'm saying is, like, when we were being pursued, we knew we had that song to come.
Oh, that's pretty good.
And those numbers that we're talking about, they were being mooted and offered before that single came out. So we were going to be a big deal. It was obvious. And
so you knew your single was going to be a big single?
Yeah, everybody did. Everybody did. And the thing is, like, the other thing was, like, with the, you know, there's no real risk. I mean, we recouped pretty quickly. You know, it was like nobody lost any money, mm-hmm. You know. And the money that they spent, yeah, fair enough. They lost the money that they spent courting us. But they controlled a really powerful catalogue for a while. You know, like, obviously we're not the world's biggest band, but the catalogue does well because that was a huge album, you know.
But I don't think many people's songs become classics very easily anymore.
Yeah, I think a publisher wants to have stuff in their roster that you'd call standards, you know, because the amount of people that cover that, you know,
if that happens anymore. Because I know it sounds flippant saying a song that's using karaoke is a sign of a successful song, but it really is.
Yeah,
because everyone knows those songs, and you're only going to sing a song, you know, that's one of those songs.
And even if you don't like, The Darkness, you know, that song done in a different way, it might still appeal, you know, or there's, you know, a million different ways to do that thing. We did an episode about the various cover versions of it.
Yeah, it's doing really well, that episode.
Yeah.
People love it.
So, I mean, and there's some really good sort of interpretations of that song that don't sound anything like the original, but the heart of it's the same, isn't it?
But it's rare that happens, I think. Maybe rock songs are one of the few songs that can come.
No, but think about a song like Valerie. Valerie! Yep.
But it's funny that's the Zootons first.
Yeah,
I heard that version first.
Yeah.
And then I was confused. I was like, Amy Winehouse is singing it?
Yeah. So most people think that the definitive version is Amy Winehouse, but it's actually a Zootons song. And the Zootons made a hell of a lot of money from her version of it. And she made a hell of a lot of money from her version of it because she was exploiting the recording and they were exploiting the publishing.
So would the publishing or the recording get more money?
I would imagine. God, that's a good question. Like if it was synchronized anywhere, like if it was in a McDonald's advert or something like that, then they would get the same amount of money each. But if it's, I think it depends on the nature of their deals and stuff like that. I wouldn't be able to guess which side of it made more.
It is complicated.
Yeah, it is. But then, you know, that's why music lawyers exist, to try and help clarify those things, you know.
But if someone wants to cover your song, can you say no?
I don't know, actually. Nobody asked me whether I was okay with...
You said before that if someone wanted to change the lyric, they have to approve.
Well, they can do what they want, but they have to pay me my share.
But you said once someone wanted to change a lyric in one of your songs and you said
that
no.
Happened, yeah, but that's a different situation.
What does that mean?
I've written a song and then the artist wanted to change a lyric. And I could smell a crazy baby coming along, and it was a real throwaway crazy baby line. And then it was like, okay, so did you just change that line so you can have someone publishing? Because I don't approve that change. That's not a good rhyme, and there's no way I'd put that in the song that I wrote. And you can't have it. I wrote the song. You either sing it, or you sing it with your extra line,
but you pay me
100% of the money. That's fair. If you don't just get to change a song and then take the money.
So they were trying to change it to take some money from you.
That was my suspicion. I didn't approve the change. You
know. If they did like a remix of your song and would they then get some of the publishing as well?
No.
But you just said that they tried to change a lyric and that means they were trying to get some of the money.
Oh, I see. What was the question you asked then?
If someone took some of the song and then changed some of the lyrics, do you have to approve them or could they still release it?
They could release it, but the publishing money would go to me.
What if you approve the lyrics and it goes to them?
That's a different situation, yeah. Then we'd come to an agreement about what percentage is what.
What if they change the lyrics? Can they just change the lyrics?
Yeah, they want to, yeah, but they have to pay me the money anyway.
Oh. Okay.
But, you know, they wouldn't need to come asking for the publishing money anyway. If they take my song and like, say I've written a song called My... Uncle Richard.
Richard?
Well, I don't really know one name. Colin. Okay, then. So, Captain Colin's
Crazy
double
Baby.
Double thumbs up song.
Right? Captain Colin's Crazy Baby.
Captain Colin's Crazy Baby. So, if I wrote Captain Colin's Crazy Baby. No, so, the song was originally called Captain Colin's Double Thumbs Up Song. And then Richie Clifton wants to cover it. And he says, yeah, it's great, but I can't get my head around that chorus. He's from up north. What about if I do Captain Colin's Crazy Baby? And then I'll be like, yeah, you can sing the song by all means, but that's an unapproved lyric change. You need to pay me 100% of the royalties. That's the situation I was talking about.
Okay.
But only publishing, like Richard Clifton's version might make, like, say, for example, McDonald's want to use Richard Clifton's Captain Collins'
Crazy Baby.
Crazy Baby.
Yeah.
They would pay half of the money to Richard Clifton because he recorded the song, and the other half of the money would go to me because I originally wrote the song that, but with the funds up. I think that's clear.
But the publishing is what makes the most money.
No, not necessarily.
Who decides?
Only God can decide. But they told you that, didn't they?
I know, I'm just trying to figure it out in my brain. Is there any point doing a cover song?
There's every point in doing a cover song.
Why?
Well, because if you do a cover song, first of all, it's a lovely bit of familiar territory. It's like reimagining another person's... I mean, there's no point in doing it from the publishing perspective. You're not going to make any money by... You're not going to make any songwriting money by covering a song. But a songwriter is not going to go into a room and go, I was going to write a song today, but you know what? I'm going to do Captain Collins' Double Thumbs Up song instead. Because that's not going to get him anywhere. They're going to try and write a song. But if they're a recording artist and they go into the studio and they go, what you got? Well, I've got this song here, which I wrote. It's called Philip Isn't Here Anymore. It's a bit sad though. I quite fancy doing a cover of Captain Collins' Double Thumbs Up song. Is that all right, lads? And then they'll go, yeah, that's fine. They'll record it, send it to the record label, and the record label will go, brilliant, this is a cover version of that one, but they've changed the thumbs to Crazy Baby. That's much more palatable and definitely more poppy. Let's get it on the radio, lads. And then they engage the record company machine, and all of the record company royalties will go to Richie Clifton. All the publishing will go to, I think, me, actually.
Yeah.
So there's every point.
Isn't it Richie that did that song, not you?
No, Richie didn't write it. He changed one of the lines, which was an unapproved change.
He had a normal amount of syllables and you had the double thumbs up song.
Yeah, because I was doing it in a sort of double thumbs up. You know, it's a little bit ragga. I think I was going rada. I was doing it rada style. Double thumbs up, and then he wanted to go ragga. So it's, you know, an unapproved change.
That makes
sense. I mean, I'm a huge Richie Clifton fan as well. I'm really glad he's doing this song, but you can't just change a song and then say to the songwriter, yeah, do you mind if I added this line? Is that all right? You can't just add, you know what I mean? You can't do that. Well, you can. Here's a good example of it. The Verve did Bittersweet Symphony. Yes, with the strings, that was an unapproved sample, unfortunately, from one of those sort of easy listening interpretations of a Rolling Stones song. I think it's The Last Time, isn't it?
So really it was the easy listening people's fault, right?
No, it was their fault. They should have recreated that thing, so they're not at least using it. Because they lost money on the... They must have... An unlicensed sample like that, they must have lost some money on the master recording. The other thing is the melody... And then I never prayed, but tonight I'm on my knees, yeah. It's nearly the same as... which is the Rolling Stones song that the Easy Listening record was an interpretation of in the first place. So they more or less sang a Rolling Stones song and changed the lyrics. That's why at the beginning of that campaign, when that was a massive hit, Mick and Keith were taking all the money.
Yeah, but now they gave it back.
They gave it back. They didn't give the money
and
back.
Richard Afgosh.
They didn't give the money back. But they said, it's okay, you guys can be the songwriters now after it's been a huge hit. They took all the money when it really mattered, you know.
But I think Richard Ashcroft thanked them at the latest Ivers or something.
Did he? Oh, cool. I like Richard Ashcroft. I think he's brilliant. I don't even think that's their best song, unfortunately.
And I think it was the manager, the Rolling Stones manager, that kind of orchestrated all that.
That's cool of him.
I think Richard and Keith were like, no, here, you can have him. Because I think they had to wait till something with the manager.
I hope that one, you know, good for, you know, even if they weren't expecting to make any money from that cover version, or from, you know, if that was seen as a cover version, then I would hope that doing a song like that, which gets so much attention, would draw people's gaze towards the album that came before that, A Northern Soul.
It doesn't though, do that.
No, I don't know if it does or not. I think more people are aware of Northern Soul than...
We did a video on it, didn't we?
Yeah, we did, because it's one of my favourite records. I think The Verve and Northern Soul is a great album.
But...
I like it more than Urban Hymns, actually.
I don't know. I don't know if people went back and listened to stuff.
I hope they did.
Maybe.
I would hope they did. I was one of the cool kids that knew about the Verve before that record, though.
Yeah, you're super cool.
I was listening to them since Storm in
Heaven. You're reaching to Richie from the Verve. Richard.
Richie Clifton.
Richie Ashcroft.
Richie Clifton from the Verve.
Yeah. That's where it comes from.
That's why. All the best rock stars are called either Richard or Colin.
Is there any famous Colins apart from Colin Farrell?
Yeah.
Oh, Colin Firth. I had a dream about Colin Firth. I think I was dating him in the dream. Sorry, he was last night. Colin. I know you hate my little tangent.
Colin the Caterpillar from Marks and Spencer's.
Yeah, but now he has Cuthbert as his enemy. What? From Little. Or Aldi.
That's hilarious. Cool tangent. Right, what are we talking about?
You said the caterpillar.
Oh, yeah,
that wasn't me.
Colin.
You always blame me. Is there any famous singers called Colin, like bands?
Yeah, my friend Matt Johns used to say...
That's not a name.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's nearly two first names. At one point, there was a storyline in EastEnders where Danny Torres came in and was trying to woo Pauline Fowler. So he created Danny Torres was a sort of pub singer. So he created a pub singer character called Colin Gemini. Does that count?
No, of course not. Oh, who is Matt Johns?
Colin
and
Gemini,
the person he came up with
Matt
is not
Johns
even a real person.
My schoolmate who was the inventor of Colin Gemini.
But was Colin Gemini a real person?
Is anybody a real person?
That performed and made music.
No.
Yeah. Is anybody? Don't try to get philosophical with me.
But you know what I mean.
Yeah. Look, really defeated for a second.
Colin.
I'm annoyed that I'm down as May. Couldn't even get my name right.
Oh, yeah.
Not even May Finn, May. It's just God. A random bit of
yeah,
my name.
I don't know who that was that did that. It's weird.
It's like if you were... It was definitely you.
Why would it be me? I know your name. Why would it be me?
I know your name.
I know your name. I say it every day.
Every day.
Every day, every day, every day.
Do publishers strike deals with advertising agencies to get you certain deals? So like why the Super Bowl advert would pay you more than like the cookie advert, if there's a cookie advert, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but, you know, I think the Super Bowl is one of the most watched sports events.
So who decides to pay? Because obviously they're just like, we just want the song. Who decides it costs this much?
Oh, that's a publishing company would probably have some kind of scale.
So someone will probably like, I want to use that song. And then they go, how much is the song?
Yeah.
It doesn't have a base rate. Does it cost per, it's like a negotiation, is it?
I think they'll start off and they'll go, yeah, we want that song. It's going to be, how much is it? And then we'll say, it's this much money. And I'll say, wow, we've only got budget for this. We'll be like, well, off your fuck then, mate.
But because sometimes you've shown me your special portal and it's the same song, but this one is like less money and then this one's
well, that
more
depends,
money.
You know, the scale that they I think it's to do with which territories it's in, what format it is, and how long the campaign's going to run for. I think most advertising campaigns last about 6 weeks.
Super Bowl is just one day, but then it is the biggest.
Yeah, exactly. So then that's worth a lot because it's like a, I don't know. Yeah, that's true, isn't it? The Super Bowl one just is one shot deal, but there's so many people watching it that it's worth it, I suppose. We had a thing once where one of the synchronizations of one of our songs was in an advert and it was only sort of licensed to be used for about 4 weeks or something like that. And then they showed it again after that by accident. And I don't know how that happened. And then they had to pay us again.
So mad.
I just wish that would happen all the time, to be honest. That'd be the best. Mm-hmm.
It's good that your song's always used in adverts.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, because I started off in advertising, so I don't care. And Mad Men as well. Did you see Mad Men, that whole series?
I mean, what about it? Oh, yeah.
I think that some adverts are just average. Some of them are actually brilliant. You know, some there's real there's real art in that world.
There's one guy who's like renowned for knowing the secret to it. I can't remember what his name is because I briefly studied advertising as part of my degree. And there's a whole, there's a whole maths to it, mathematics, you know, and I don't like maths. So.
No.
But I think some of it's stuck in my brain.
Maths don't like you either.
Yeah. All right.
Why is she saying these numbers? This is all wrong.
Hey, you know why? Because my brain's messed up.
Yeah.
It's a disability.
No, it's a superpower.
Superpower? But the advertising module was quite good. I can't remember the guy, but he just knew how to make any advert work and people buy the thing.
Mm. Yeah.
That's strange.
I mean... But it's the difficult thing is when you get like, if you try and pick and choose which things you allow your music to be in, it's difficult to get it right because so much can go wrong between like the initial sort of conceptual discussions that you have about what the advert's going to be. And then if you're lucky enough to have like an advert built around your song, then so much of it, of how good it is, depends on the way they realise the original idea. And sometimes it can just go badly wrong, you know. It's like just, it's that thing of carrying a raindrop through the desert. Anything could spoil it at any point.
But sometimes it's just for a Chinese takeaway.
What?
Sometimes it's just for a Chinese takeaway.
Exactly.
Some random guy singing instead of you.
Ah, but that's a good thing because it's not me singing it. So, yeah, no.
But is there anything you vetoed before and go, no, I don't approve of that?
We did turn down, just before Samsung, we turned something down and it was like, but the reasoning wasn't for anything, you know, there was nothing.
Well, you were scared that Samsung wouldn't come in because...
We didn't know Samsung was on the horizon, but the reason why we turned it down was to keep our powder dry. That was the idea. And then Samsung showed up and was like, oh, okay, that was the right thing to do.
But what about like a product? Would you be like, no, okay. What about meat? You're vegetarian. You don't approve.
I would only approve if they had something vegan on the menu. That's actually, I have turned things down. I've turned down milk companies before.
Oh, why?
Because it's bad for the world.
They don't have vegan, did you?
Yeah, I think if somebody has like a moral objection to a product, then the rest of the guys who are the co-writers would respect that, I think.
I think the keyboardist in Sigur Rós apparently is very strict.
Yeah.
He doesn't like things being, his songs being used.
And yet they're in, their stuff's in a lot of... their stuff's in a lot of different... synchronised in a lot of different places.
Yeah, but... Yeah,
a lot of movies, though. To be fair, yeah, it's difficult to turn stuff down when there's good money, though. That's the problem.
Alcohol. That's a sober person.
I have actually.
But you don't have any moralistic thing against alcohol, do you?
No,
I can never tell if you do.
I understand
or not,
why people like having drink, and I used to really appreciate wine and even some craft ales. And I know some people who like those little beers in the little cans with the sort of brightly coloured labels and stuff. I know some people like that. And I never
give a weird thing against the little cans.
I never give anybody a hard time about the alcohol.
You don't give anyone a hard time apart from one person.
Myself.
Yeah.
If you've been thinking about getting serious with your money, like actually serious, now's the time. The Motley Fool is offering new members 50% off their iconic stock recommendation service, Stock Advisor. This is the same service that's crushed the market with recommendations that have returned 1,057% since inception, compared to the S&P 500's 180% over that same period. This isn't guesswork. The Motley Fool has a track record of finding companies before they become household names. So if you want to invest smarter and you like saving money while doing it, go to fool.com/listen to claim your 50% off discount off a one-year term of Stock Advisor. Again, that's fool.com/listen. Returns of 1,057% are from the Motley Fool's product Stock Advisor and measured against S&P 500 returns of 180% as of July 10th, 2025. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. All investing involves a risk of loss. Individual investment results may vary.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I don't know either. There's no rules. Sometimes I feel stuff and sometimes I don't.
You should just have that on a hat. sometimes I feel stuff,
sometimes I don't. The new merchandise.
I think that's a good one.
It's not bad, is it? Sometimes I feel stuff. Let's try that.
That would be a good song.
Sometimes I feel stuff.
Can we write that song?
Okay, let's do it.
I can't hear that, but that's fine.
Can't. Sometimes I feel stuff. Sometimes I don't. That's it. Job done. Sometimes I'll do stuff. Sometimes I won't. Come on. Yeah. Contribute something.
Sometimes I like you, sometimes I don't, but even though you said that already.
That's the same as the book.
I know, but it's okay, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's fine. You can do it again. Yeah. Driving me crazy.
Because you're a crybaby.
That doesn't rhyme.
Crazy baby. Actually, technically, it does rhyme.
No, it doesn't.
Say another rhyme, just randomly.
What, like crazy baby?
No, just say a rhyme. Don't think about it too much.
Wishing you Christmas pleasure that you cannot measure.
Oh, okay, never mind.
Why?
No, that's fine.
That rhymes. What was the point you were
going to make? Because isn't the rhyme the sound?
Yeah, I suppose so. But I think crazy baby is a near rhyme or an internal rhyme.
Because isn't the sound E?
No, it's to do with the bit just before the last bit.
Because I think there's been some lyrics written where there's a bit before the last bit.
Oh, yeah, there's
different.
Been some that don't rhyme in the slightest. I'm not proud of it. But sometimes you do things and then, like, you write a song and then you know it's a shit rhyme. And then, like, you come back to it and then you change it. And then the guy's like, you know what? I liked it better before when it was Crazy Baby. And I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake.
I thought I rhymed something and now I'm like, maybe it doesn't rhyme.
Oh, go on.
Because I thought I rhymed Maleficent with different, but that's not right, is it? Because I thought that's quite good because I wanted to use the word Maleficent in the song.
Yeah. Well, then.
And I didn't want to say magnificent because that's almost, they're very different.
You can do something like 77%.
Can I not use different?
You can, yeah. It sounds like it. It's probably an internal rhyme or near rhyme or something.
I thought it was quite good.
Yeah, it's quite good, but it just, technically, for me, it's not an actual true rhyme. Not that it matters. I mean, I'm sure it's still good.
Yeah, but if you use it, if you write your songs with the same logic, then really...
Well, I'm trying not to get hung up on that sort of thing. I think it's more important to emote something than it is to rhyme something, you know? But I think there's enough words at our disposal to do both. It's that thing that Richie Kotzen was talking about when you have passion, attitude and skill.
But also he said he prefers free form anyway.
Yeah, okay. But what I'm talking about is like he's talking about a time when those three elements of a guitar player existed at the same time. I still think it's possible to emote and use the vast lexicon at our disposal to find true rhymes that still emote, you know, without sounding clever.
Does that always have to be true?
I admit, when I get it wrong, it just sounds clever, and it's completely, you know, pierced whatever emotion was being developed by the song in the first place.
Because sometimes doesn't it...
But when you get it right, it's really fantastic.
But then doesn't it sometimes hinder the progress of a song if you're caught up on something technical when the words coming out are actually doing the job in a very...
Yeah, but then
way.
I think we should all listen to songwriters like Ron Sexsmith.
But he probably has loads of half rhymes.
He probably does.
Yeah.
He probably does, but they're just not on the radar because the stuff he's writing is so cool and really pulls you in.
That's what I mean. But he probably is focused on the narrative rather than necessarily the...
Secret heart, what are you made of? What are you so afraid of? Could it be three simple words?
That's the two
or
words
the fear
the same.
Of being overheard. He's
but he
amazing.
Says the
he's...
first and the third line were both of.
What are you made of? Afraid of. It's made and afraid. is the rhyme.
I guess so.
It is.
But I thought using the same word twice at the end was also a faux pas.
No, because it becomes part of the thing, doesn't it? Like if you just say, what are you made of? No, made of. That would be a faux pas if it was made of, rhyming with made of.
Yeah. I guess you can justify any use if it adds to the song.
Yeah, but there is a rhyme in there. It just doesn't fall at the end of a line.
What about the rest of it?
Makes it even more clever, actually.
What about the rest of it? I was so happy with my different thing, but then I realised that the word was different. I was just happy to have Maleficent in there. Because I was using proper words. I wasn't like being lazy with my words. But I didn't want to use magnificent. Oh, I could actually probably change it to magnificent.
I'm going to look at the Secret Heart lyrics because I think it's one of those ones where it really emotes and there's true rhymes all the way through. Secret Heart lyrics.
What about plurals and stuff?
I don't know. Yeah, I think he plays with that a little bit.
Because sometimes that's annoying, isn't
Secret
it?
Heart, Secret Heart, why so mysterious? Why so sacred? Why so serious? Maybe you're just acting tough. Maybe you're just not man enough. Brilliant. This very secret that you're trying to conceal is the very same one that you're trying to, that you're dying to reveal.
That's not a true rhyme.
Yeah, it is. Reveal and conceal.
No, there's a V and a C.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Secret Heart, come out and share it. Loneliness, few can bear it. Brilliant. Something to do with admitting that you just can't go through it. It's close. Yeah, so he can get away with it, I think, because it's just...
That's what I mean, yeah.
Really good.
And conceal and reveal, most people would say that's a... would feel like a true rhyme. Because it's like...
It's weird,
it's
isn't
the,
it?
So it's the noise.
So the one you the said, Maleficent, Maleficent and different.
And different. So they had three syllables each.
So it's nearly the same.
End and end is the end of the word, so that's why my brain was
why
like,
doesn't
oh,
it
they
feel
rhyme.
The same... Maybe it is a real.
Because you go Maleficent, different, but it's the scent. It's the beginning of the last syllable that starts at a different letter.
Yeah, yeah. So that's
the
okay.
Sound,
then, right? So that's okay.
The sound. Well, before you said not okay, but now you're saying okay.
I think I'm
but
saying maybe, okay.
So it's
I think I might have misheard you before. Say it again.
Different, Maleficent, ENT.
Yeah.
That's why I was saying that's where the crazy baby thing.
It's good. So how, but in what context? How do you
I don't know, there's
there?
A line in between. I can't remember. I think it was something like, you think you're so different, but your actions are maleficent or something.
Okay.
I can't actually remember what the sentence are. It was the second verse, so the first verse always sticks more.
I mean, some Beatles songs just do the first verse twice.
Yeah.
Some people do that.
Yeah, actually, I was playing a Beatles song the other day and I was like, wait a minute, it's just the same verse over and over again.
But then, like, you try and write another one, it's like, why are you bothering? People like the first one, just do that twice.
You just sing a bit different.
Ultimate pop writing.
They're the ultimate pop stars.
Yeah, it's true. And the
they're One Direction. They're One Direction of the 60s.
Wow, the band that
been,
One Direction were the band that the Beatles could have been.
What? That's not very nice for the Beatles.
I know, and it's also me being
facetious.
Facetious.
Secretious.
Oh. Secretious. Does that mean that I secrete stuff all the time?
Do you?
I am at the moment. It's quite warm here, though.
Oh.
And my trousers are too heavy. It's a really dense material. My legs are all sweaty.
They're very blue.
I know, they're the wrong choice.
Oh, I'm wearing blue as well.
Bloody cheek.
Yeah.
Oh, God, anyway, so that's the uniform for today. Please submit your photographs of yourselves wearing the...
uniform. The
Jaws of Victory uniform. Brown top, blue trousers. Right?
Yeah. Glasses and a short bob, shaggy bob.
Yeah.
You've got a shaggy bob too.
Enough about my... Oh, forget about it.
Enough about you.
Yeah, that Manscaped stuff hasn't turned up. Hello! 4 grand, please, Manscaped. Here's another thing about publishing. Like, if you have a relationship with somebody who does music and you're a top line, sometimes it's like...
That's what I was going to ask, actually.
Yeah, well, I don't know. There's no... Because the thing is, there's no answer to the question that you're about to ask. But ask it anyway.
Do you know how much you're going to make from a song when you're songwriting with other people? Like, as in, do you know your percentage? Are you like, oh, you're going in and write in a song? Or do they... Like, could you be fucked over, basically, after you go into
Yeah, easily. Anybody could be fucked over at any point. And there's always...
Because who's monitoring that? So if you go into a writing session and...
I think you just have to come to an agreement with the person that you're working with. And it's always good to get that out of the way in the first moments, because it can create tension and cause problems later on.
I think that happened to my ex. He was in a writing session and he wrote the melody because he's... And the harmonies, because that's what he's good at. He's good at writing melodies. But then he started contributing to the lyrics as well. I think he wrote the bridge, the lyrics to the bridge. He gave the singer like that. Mm. And then when it came to chopping up the royalties, the manager or someone came into the room and wanted 20%.
What?
And they were trying to cut down his percentage. And he's like, well, I wrote the melody and the harmonies and the bridge. And I was just trying to help him fight for it, because I was like, "Who?" And he's like, "This other guy just came in and was saying, because he was in the room, but he didn't."
That's a very old Nashvillean style.
But he only sat in for like a little bit and was like,
"Yeah." And now you know why he sat in for a little bit.
Yeah, but then because my ex was not used to being fighting for his stuff.
Mm.
But he's the type of person who would end up writing everything, because he's quite very good at that.
Mm.
Especially harmonies and horn lines.
Yeah, I don't know. Don't even know if harmonies counts as writing, really, because it's.
But he didn't. He wasn't going to contribute lyrics wise, but he gave him probably one of the few lyrics he had for his bridge.
Mm. But there's no rules.
Do you get anything for the melody?
You've got to establish how that's going to work before you start working, if you can.
Is that what you do?
Generally, if I'm co-writing with somebody, it's 50-50. You know. And if it's like, if I'm working with, how can I put this? If I go to, like, if I'm there in the capacity of a writer, then I want basically what a fair percentage is for a contributing person. And sometimes I can be doing a lot more than everybody else, and sometimes I'll be doing a lot less. It depends how inspired I am on the day. But the fact that I'm there is actually, you know, that's a, in a way it's a contribution, because you're contributing to the vibe, you know. When that guy walks in for 10 minutes, I mean, that's really unfair, you know.
Yeah.
But if you've, I don't know, if you've come in and gone, yeah, what about this chord instead of that one, that's totally different, isn't it? I think if you're open-heartedly taking part in something, writing from...
Would you get paid per day on top of contribution?
You don't do
so
that.
So if you if you get asked to do a songwriting session and nothing comes of it, that's just free labour, free work.
Yeah. But it's a numbers game. You can get... There's so many songs released every day. I mean, what did we say? It was 180,000 released to the streaming platforms every day. The world needs better songs. You know, there's always songs to be written.
But when you get asked to do something, it's usually with some sort of established artist or something anyway. So there's the machine.
Not always, though. Not always. There's a lot of stuff you do on spec. And you never know what's going to happen to the songs, you know?
What about if you're a guitarist and you're just writing the music? How does that work?
You better find yourself someone who can actually write songs.
No, but like, is lyrics and that seem to be represented if you write the melody, if you write the music, is it the same?
It depends on your agreement with the person you're collaborating with, I think. Doesn't it?
I don't know. I'm asking you.
I don't fucking know. There's no rules.
So if you give
someone a riff... It's the Wild West. It's still the Wild West. It always will be.
If you give someone a riff
and
then they wrote the rest of the song.
I think there are some established guitar players that do that. They just go in and they say, I don't write chords, melodies or anything, but here's a riff. And then they'll take whatever is deemed a fair percentage for that.
Hmm.
You know, riffs are important.
Yeah.
In rock music, it's essential.
What's a top liner? Is that melody?
Melody and sometimes lyrics as well.
What's under a top liner? What's the other bit? What other people in the songwriting session are there? There's top liner.
It depends on the style of music. Sometimes you get people who do beats. They call doing beats, but actually that's the full musical accompaniment. And then the top line is the melody, and sometimes that includes the lyrics. Sometimes you get people like Bernie Taupin who just writes lyrics and sends lyrics to people. And usually those guys are amazing lyricists.
Yeah.
You know. And then it's like, oh, this is a brilliant poem and it really inspires the whole thing. Here's half of the money is what you would normally expect to get if you did that. Because it's half of it is. I mean, it's words and music. That's how a song is actually... Yep. Laid out. I think it should, in my view, the lyrics should be 50% and the music should be 50%.
What about the melody? Isn't that one of the most important bits?
That's music. Music is melody and chords.
But isn't the singing melody often sometimes different?
If I had my way, it would be like this. 25% would be the chords and the riffs. 25% would be the melody and 50% would be the lyrics.
So you're saying melodies...
Melody is what?
Different than
no,
music.
I'm saying melody is part of music. Because music to me is a melody and then the accompaniment underneath it. Because it's about how the notes that you sing in the melody relate harmonically to the chords underneath it. Like you might sing the fifth, you know, it depends on the mode you're in. And there's no way to simplify that really, but...
So would it go lyrics, melody, music?
I just think that if you read a piece of sheet music, you're looking at notes and chords, yeah. and lyrics. And sometimes you go onto a quiz show on the television, they'll say, who sang Imagine All the People? You know what I mean? Who sang the lines Imagine All the People? You'd be like, oh, Elton John Lennon. Oh no, I said it wrong. You know, it'd be like that. You know what I mean? Like, so the lyrics are, I think, half of a song, if there's a song with lyrics in it, and I think,
well, it's a story, so would it? Well, no, then you get,
yeah, whatever it happens to be. I just think it's
music.
Like, if I said to you, "You spin me round like a record, baby, round round yeah. like a record," that's like, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Pete Burns,
huh?
Pete Burns, right?
Exactly. It's a deep burn in the song.
No, Pete Burns.
Yeah, Pete Burns. Yeah, I heard what you said. Yeah, so I think lyrics is of equal importance as music, and music includes melody, in my opinion. But there's other people that see it differently, you know, and everybody structures their thing in their own way.
Yeah.
So there are no rules. It is, like I said before, it's the Wild West. And nobody
and
knows.
The creatives are bad at that, so they often probably won't negotiate.
That's beforehand. How people end up feeling... aggrieved and, you know, like they've been ripped off and stuff. It's just because there aren't any rules and everyone's sort of just, you know, people get greedy, some people don't get greedy enough, and there's no hard and fast kind of arrangement for those situations. It's all a negotiation. But in my view, lyrics 50, melody 25, you know what I mean? That's how it should be.
And guitar at the end.
Guitar at the end. Justin Hawkins rides again. Again. Guitar at the end. Oh, still. Oh, isn't that lovely?
I can't hear it.
Can you hear it?
No.
Can't
really
hear
no.
it?
No.
Nice?
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Join me next Monday for another episode of Justin Hawkins Rides Again, featuring drummer extraordinaire Rufus Tiger Taylor. Excitement. Nice one, guys. See you later. Okay.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.